This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Washington, D.C. Here's Lynn, Murray, and Solly.
Joining us now on the Quicken Loans guest hotline will be one, Sebastian Salazar of ESPN. Follow Sebastian on Twitter because, well, it's the World Freaking Cup and you should be. At Sebi Salazar Foot. That's at S-E-B-I. Salazar, you can spell
that. I like
how
you said Foot.
I did.
That's pretty good.
Capital F-U-T to close. It's a verified account. He is on Twitter. Joins us on the Quicken Loans guest hotline brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Tim Murray, Scott Linden today, Steve Solomon back tomorrow. Sebastian from Russia, good morning, sir. How are you?
Greetings from Ekaterinburg, the gateway to Asia. The city straddles the line between the two continents, Europe and Asia. We actually went to the physical marker this morning. So earlier today, I took my first steps of my life into Asia. It's pretty cool.
That's got to be pretty awesome. What have the venues been like, Sebastian, over there?
It's interesting because each city, you know, has its own feel. We were in Moscow for the first maybe 10 days of our trip, which included about 5 days before the tournament began. And when we got there, I was kind of let down. First of all, it was cold, which no World Cup should ever be cold. It's a summer event. And frankly, the folks didn't really seem to be that into the early games. The Portugal-Spain game, you'll remember the 3-3, the golazos from Ronaldo. We had to beg the people in the restaurant we were in to turn it on, and then everybody else in the restaurant was kind of salty when we would celebrate or react to a goal. But once the Russian team started to play well, you know, they dropped 5 in the first game, they won their second game 3-1, I think it really kind of captured people. And there's nothing that makes a World Cup better than the host country, especially if it's an unexpected run, making a run deep into the tournament. So now that we're 2 weeks in, I think the Russian people are really starting to get into this event. One, they're feeling the role of host, and two, their team, even though they lost badly to Uruguay yesterday, is still going through, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, what was the feeling yesterday when they lost to, as you said it correctly, I'll just butcher it, Uruguay yesterday?
Way to go, Mark.
What was the feel in the motherland when they got, you know, shut out by Uruguay?
You know, the reality was heading into that game, Russia had already clinched a spot in the round of 16, and that was, I think, all the expectation that there was from the Russian people. If you look back over the history of World Cups, only once has the host nation failed to get out of the group phase. That happened 2010 with South Africa. There was a lot of concern here in Russia that that fate would end up striking this team. But they put, first of all, they got a really easy group, we have to say it. And their first two games, Saudi Arabia and Egypt, just were not the opponents that I think most of us thought they would be. So once they were in, I think from all there, it's, you know, it's kind of icing on the cake. There was some disappointment, but even though Uruguay is not the team they were in 2010, maybe when they made the run to the semifinals, they still have some big name players. A guy like Luis Suarez, maybe for a lot of your listeners, he's more known as the guy who bites people. But he is a star striker for Barcelona, so this is a guy of elite quality. And, you know, on paper, even though it was a home match for Russia, Uruguay was a pretty heavy favorite.
Today, Group D, there's some interesting scenarios, and I was trying to read through them, and I'm sure multiple listeners to our show fell asleep. But, you know, when you look at what happens today in Group D, what's your feeling on who's going to come out of that? Because aside from Croatia, it's really up in the air with Nigeria, Iceland, and Argentina. And, you know, if Argentina doesn't get out, Sebastian, how big of a, you know, failure is this for Messi and his country not to get out of group play?
Right. So as you mentioned, Croatia with 6 points from their first two games, a couple of victories, they're already through. Iceland needs a win against Croatia, which would be really, sorry, but unlikely. Even though Croatia is likely to rest a few of their star players, they're deep enough. I think that they'll beat Iceland, who are the darlings of this tournament. That a country with such a small population could even qualify for the tournament is a wonderful story in and of itself, but I think their journey ends today. So then you get to Nigeria and Argentina. Argentina has just 1 point, the sole draw that they earned against Iceland. Nigeria has 3. Argentina has to win today against Nigeria. Nigeria with a draw, barring an improbable Iceland victory, would go through. Here's the thing with Argentina. they are Messi and a bunch of guys. And there are some guys on the team who have names but are not performing to their names, either because they're just not playing well or because they're past it, frankly. Maybe their prime was one World Cup or in some cases even two World Cups ago. Now, those who follow this Argentina team had real serious question marks about them heading into this tournament. But because Argentina is such a powerhouse, when you question Argentina, you say, okay, well, maybe they could be in for a disappointment. You think that for them, that translates to out in the quarterfinals. I don't really think a lot of people saw, even though this is a pretty complicated group and maybe the toughest, most even group in the tournament, I don't think a lot of people saw Argentina going out, especially when you consider that this is Lionel Messi's probably final World Cup in his absolute prime. He might still be a good player at 35 years old, but he's not going to be the Leo Messi that we've seen for the last decade, who has dominated world soccer right up there with Cristiano Ronaldo. Unfortunately, he can't do it by himself. And the guys around him, either because of the positions that the coach is putting them in or because of their own kind of lack of ability to play with the national team, because many of them have incredible success at the club level, have, I think, really let him down. And he's going to bear the brunt of it. And when Cristiano Ronaldo scores a hat trick in the opening game, people are going to say, well, what's wrong with Messi? And they're going to point to his body language. Well, Messi's not an emotive guy. He's not necessarily a rah-rah leader type of guy. He is the greatest player for me, and it's maybe a taste thing of this generation. But I think a lot of people want more. They want a fist-pumping captain out of Leo Messi. And right now, this Argentina team is on the verge of an absolute disaster. The expectations in Argentina, maybe not from those that really know soccer, but from the fans, from the press, are that no matter what, Argentina should be in the last four of this tournament. And there's a chance they may not even make it out of the first four in their group.
But Sebastian, back to your initial point, the press and the media and the fans want one thing. Are they realistic in those expectations? Because it sounds like, you know, from your brief description, you made Argentina sound sort of like the Cavaliers. It's LeBron and some guys, and it's Messi and some guys.
No, it's a brilliant comparison. We were actually talking about it on one of our podcasts earlier, and it's like the 2007 Cavs, was that the team that was brutally bad that LeBron kind of limped into the finals? The same thing with Messi. This team needed a Messi hat trick in their last qualifying game just to make it to the World Cup. And most good teams, at least in kind of the tournament setup, right? If you can limit the damage a team can do to you, you will advance. You will go far in tournaments, even if you don't have the game breakers on the attacking end. Good teams are built from the back to the front. This Argentina team is the opposite. They are top heavy, and their back line is very, very weak. And when you have a structure like that, you can tend to topple over, and I think that's going to happen. I still think this team should get out of the group phase. They have the talent for that. It would still be a shock if they don't make it. But those people that expect this team to be a semifinalist or more than that team are just looking at the shirt. They're not actually looking at the roster.
Talking to Sebastian Salazar of ESPN, kind enough to join us from Russia. Follow Sebastian on Twitter, at Sebi Salazar Foot. That's F-U-T right at the end. Sebastian, who are your other sort of disappointments from group phase so far?
Well, the team that I had winning the whole tournament was Germany. Now, I can't say that I'm all that disappointed because we're here covering the Mexican national team. My mother's Mexican. I'm a fan of Azri, so I'm not disappointed that they struggled certainly against Mexico and then needed a late surge at the end to get past a Sweden team that, while solid, is definitely not spectacular. Brazil has been a little bit underwhelming. A lot of that comes down to Neymar. He's their star player. He had some injury issues coming into this tournament, and frankly, he does not look like a player at 100%. You definitely throw Argentina in the big disappointment category. And then based on what we saw last night with Spain, Spain was another one of the top three, four favorites if you went by kind of what the casinos, what the bookmakers were saying. First of all, you can't ship three goals in a group phase game and expect to have the type of defense necessary to make a deep run in this tournament. When Spain won the World Cup in 2010, they only scored eight goals in the whole tournament. They were built on shutting other teams out. And you saw it last night. They just can't keep the ball in the back of their own end. When they get into the attacking third, it's pretty fun to watch. They ping it around, and it's magic. But in the back, they're a disaster. And so I think that's really, for me, guys, been the story of the group phase. The favorites have overwhelmingly underwhelmed, which makes you think that this might be the tournament where a team that hasn't won yet, a Croatia, a Portugal, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but a Mexico who's looked pretty good through two games, could, if not win at all, get to a final, get to a semifinal, those places of rarefied air where usually it's just the true blue bloods that make it that far.
Sebastian, a couple quick ones before we let you run. England and Belgium, is it just of, you know, Tanzania and Panama not very good, or are those two countries playing very well so far?
Yes, it's a combination of both. Tunisia and Panama are not very good. Panama's at another level, right? They were just kind of happy to be in this World Cup. They were the only team that qualified with a negative goal differential. They're like two best strikers are a combined 75 years old. So, you know, they're the, if Iceland is the darling, those guys were the real, real super underdogs, Panama. And so I think you have to look at the scores that both Belgium and England put up in those matches and say, okay, I put an asterisk next to it. Belgium is a very, very, very talented team, guys. They're another one of those outsiders that have yet to win a World Cup that I think you got to throw in that category of, with all the big-time favorites struggling, Belgium may now have a chance. There are concerns with Belgium, as there are concerns with England. Again, a very talented roster on paper. England not talented to the level that Belgium is. They're also very young, this English side. The nice thing for England, though, is because they brought a bunch of young guys, there's no expectations as there have been in the past. But, great point, neither team has really been tested yet. When they face off in the group phase finale, there won't be a bunch on the line other than, you know, you always want to be first in your group. It helps with seeding for the round of 16. That can be very important with who you match up against. But it's going to be the first real test for either team, and it's going to be a great measuring stick for the rest of us, those of us who are analyzing this tournament, to see how real are both of these squads when they go up against somebody at least close to their level.
And before we let you run, I was all in on Iceland. They're not going to likely advance, as you've mentioned. So now I've turned my attention in these last 5 minutes to Senegal. I love Senegal. What needs to happen for them to advance? I know they play Colombia in a couple days.
Boy, that group is, to me, one of the more interesting groups of the tournament. Basically, I mean, you know, for Senegal, with 4 points from their first two games, a win and they're in, and a win, and they could win the group, which for African countries is unprecedented. If African countries escape from the group phase, frankly, it's usually as a second-place team. Here's why I love Senegal. When analysts talk about African teams, and specifically sub-Saharan African teams, you hear a lot of stereotypes. Speed, strength. You also hear negative stereotypes, right? Individually undisciplined, collectively unorganized. This Senegal team is breaking down those stereotypes. They are beating well-organized, in air quotes, European teams that are actually the ones who are falling apart in the critical moments, especially what you saw in their first match of the tournament against Poland. I think Senegal is a great team to pick if you're going to jump on a bandwagon, and they have one of the true star players in this tournament in Sadio Mane, an exciting, electrifying player in his own right. So Senegal, from the reasons, is a fun team to root for.
And their fans clean up after themselves.
Yes, we did see that. You know, we've seen that from a few fan bases. The Japanese did it as well in the stadium. So, you know, the fans, when they come here, they know that they're carrying the flag for their nation. They want to put on a good show, and a lot of times it's pretty cool.
Sebastian, thanks so much for your time, man. Enjoy it. Sounds like the trip of a lifetime. We will talk soon, we hope.
All right, take it easy, guys, anytime.
Thank you. At Sebi Salazar Foot, that's S-E-B-I Salazar, S-A-L-A-Z-A-R-F-U-T. Sebastian Salazar of ESPN joins us to talk a little World Cup. On the other side, it's a buy or sell Tuesday. Buy low, sell high in the world of sports and beyond. It's Murray and Lynn. Sally back tomorrow. He's voting today for himself. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.